I'm here in London, and I'm delighted to be joined by His Excellency Michael Zimmermann, who is the Austrian Ambassador to the United Kingdom.
Good morning.
So, Your Excellency, talk to me firstly about Austria's presidency of the Council of the European Union.
In the European Union, member states play an important role, and the most visible part of that role is the so-called presidency. Presidency rotates every 6 months, so that all member states have the chance to be in the driving seat of the Union in regular intervals. And for us, that's quite important. Austria is a small country, but we can get our voice heard within the European Union.
Do you think that that six-month rotation is too frequent because it doesn't allow for much continuity, or do you like it?
We had our last presidency in 2006, 12 years ago. If you would rotate the presidency only each year, then it would be 24 years until you have your next presidency. And I think it's more important to involve the European Union membership countries frequently and in regular shorter intervals. So that's quite okay with the 6 months.
So what are the aims and objectives of Austria's presidency of the Council of the European Union? What do you hope to accomplish?
I think in the mind of our people, the question of security is the most pertinent one at the moment. And the slogan for our presidency is a Europe that protects. We want to make sure that the Union protects its citizens in economic, in security terms, and any other way which is necessary.
Austria was working with Estonia when Estonia held the presidency. Who are the other two countries that Austria is going to be working with in trio, or as it's sometimes called, in troika?
The three countries in our troika are Estonia, Bulgaria and Austria. And we are the last one. So we finished that troika from the beginning of 2019. Romania will take over and start with a new troika.
How are the other two countries decided?
That was a council decision made a long time ago. That's a set order, so you don't get to choose your partners, but you get to choose some of the topics.
Is there anything that was learned from working with Estonia during its presidency that Austria is going to carry forward into its own?
Absolutely. We congratulate our Estonian friends to their enormous progress in digitalization. Estonia is one of the most advanced countries in Europe in that respect. And we have they have forwarded the topic of a competitive digitalization to us, and we continue that.
So, is membership of the European Union popular amongst Austrians?
In general terms, yes. There is regular polls which are conducted by the EU. The EU is very interested in keeping the hand on the pulse of the people in the member countries. That means the opinion, the changes of opinion are closely watched, and we know pretty well what the opinion of the Austrian people towards the EU is at any given moment.
What are the common criticisms that Austrians have about the European Union, if any? We hear a lot about bureaucracy in this country.
I think that's the same all over the EU. It's a very complex body which has to organize 400 million people, which has to make sure that they are... The EU is a very complex organism, so to speak, ranging from Portugal until Finland, and from at the moment the northern Scottish Isles to Malta. Yes, it needs bureaucracy to organize that. Yes, it needs bureaucracy to get the participation of the member countries, to get the participation of the people in place. And yes, nobody likes bureaucracy per se. But if you explain to people what it's actually for, to make sure that the union is not managed top-down but bottom-up, then people understand.
One of the common criticisms that British people have about the European Union is the way it impacts on agriculture and farming. And I know that farming and agriculture is a big part of Austrian life because of the hinterlands. So how has EU membership impacted upon Austrian farmers? Is there a lot of Euroscepticism amongst the Austrian agricultural communities?
I think all over the EU, farmers are among the most critical people as regards the Union, the European Union. But we should also consider the interests of the consumers, and there are many more consumers in the European Union than farmers, and we have to look at environmental aspects. And for Austria, farming should be one of the areas which contributes to our environment, which makes our environment safer, cleaner, which keeps our landscape intact, which provides people with healthy, wholesome foodstuff. And that's an ongoing discussion. Many, not all the producers are always happy with the policy of the EU. But I think for the consumers in general, the situation has vastly improved over the last decades.
So Austria uses a federal parliamentary system, which means that laws differ between federal states. How does that translate or sit with European Union membership? Because that means that you've got a system whereby the power isn't only coming from another federal state, it's coming from another country. Do the Austrians welcome being in a system whereby decisions are made for them within an organ in which 28 countries have got to agree? Or would they prefer it if more power were devolved to the local government?
Mm-hmm. In Britain, you have had 20 years of devolution, meaning to ceding powers from the central government to the Scottish, Welsh and Northern Irish ones. In Austria, it's the other way around. Our lender, the regions, have 1,000 years of territorial integrity and cultural identity. And Austria is, so to speak, the common denominator of these nine historic traditional countries. Our constitution makes sure that the regional interests are well represented, and our government's task is to represent those interests in Brussels. It makes for maybe for a complicated or more complicated process, but people do not feel alienated by politics and not alienated by European politics because they see their interests represented.
Okay. So Austria joined the EU in 1995. Was it a welcome move?
I think it was a huge step forward for Austria. When I grew up, there was one brand of butter in the supermarket, one brand of milk, and there were two TV stations. At that time, we were looking, say, towards the United States as something, as a country where you have, which was prosperous, where you have the freedom to start business, where you have the choice between consumer products. That was 30 years ago. Now, 25 years after joining the European Union, we have basically reached the same standard, and we don't look towards America anymore as a country where you where you get better consumer products, where you have more and better entertainment. We have reached that level here in Europe, and I think, generally speaking, that was an extremely good development.
Did the memory of the four occupying powers who left Austria in 1955, did that play a role in Austria wanting to be part of a democratic union, i.e. shake off any Soviet influences, or was it a lot more forward-looking than that?
Both. My grandparents lived through two world wars fought on their own soil. They lived through at least half a dozen different styles of government, half a dozen currencies. They have known instability, foreign occupation. I think the general agreement is that the EU protects us against, protects Europe against such against the resurrection of such a past. We do see the European Union as what we call a peace project, and it works very well as a peace project, as the 50, 60, 70 years of stability and peace in Europe show. And I think we can live with a bit of administration and bureaucracy if in return we get what we have in peace, stability and prosperity.
What difficulties and changes could Austria face when the UK leaves the EU in March 2019?
We are I'm not happy at all with the fact that the UK will leave the European Union. The UK is an important, is a large, powerful, modern country in Europe, and it would be much better to have it in the club than outside the club. We will certainly rebuild bilateral relationships, but at the moment I cannot see very much of a win-win situation coming out of Brexit, if I'm frank.
Is European Union funding ever thought of in comparison to Marshall Aid? Is it thought of in the same way, or does the memory of the war recovery years not really play a part in European Union membership?
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, Austrians are extremely grateful for what the Marshall Plan delivered in aid and support over many decades after the Second World War. It allowed us to rebuild our country and to become a modern and competitive economy. Similar feelings apply to European Union support. You mentioned that Austria is a very regionally specific country, and there were regions in Austria that were until 25 years ago not as developed as other parts of Europe. EU structural funds helped a lot to get that up on par. And you also mentioned agriculture, and the EU contributed very much to maintain our agricultural structure, to maintain the traditional rural structures, and to help traditional farming to become something more, to become something that contributes to health, to the environment, to economic growth.
We talked about Brexit. German is the most widely spoken language in Europe, but notoriously, the British aren't very good at learning modern languages or foreign languages. Do you think that we are linguistically isolating ourselves on this island? And if so, do you think that may have contributed to the British decision to leave the European Union?
No, I don't think so at all. German may be the most widely spoken mother tongue, but the language of business, of academics, of science, of research is English all over Europe, all over the world, and it will remain so, and it will become even more popular so.
Austria joined in 1995, same time as Sweden and Finland. Does Austria have an affinity or a closeness with those two countries? Because the UK joined along with Denmark and Ireland, and there is definitely a closeness between those three countries. I just wondered if it's the same for Austria and Sweden and Finland.
Absolutely, because the factor that all these three countries have in common are that they are not NATO countries. All three countries had to look very closely if they can combine their EU membership with their traditional neutral status. But in 1995, after the fall of the Iron Curtain, the time was right, and there was no contradiction anymore of being not a NATO member and still joining EU.
One of the priorities of your presidency is, as well as security, the fight against illegal migration. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. In the wake of the 2015 immigration crisis in Europe, governments all over the EU have made it a priority to avoid such developments in future. And the EU has external borders. That is a clear term, but until recently or until now, it is up to member countries on their own to protect these external borders. The 2015 events and subsequent events, especially the migration routes across the Mediterranean, have shown that it is extremely difficult for single European countries to protect their external borders, and that the burden sharing between the countries within the EU is not fair. So it's one of our priorities to help the EU and not just single member countries to defend, protect the external borders. And it is also one of our priorities to work towards a fair burden sharing as far as migration is concerned. 2015 was one of the most unexpected and still grave developments the EU has faced in its history. Many people, if not a majority of EU citizens, are worried about future migration questions and problems. And the EU definitely has the task to improve its policies, to set measures that protect the external borders and give the people the feeling that they are being protected. We have made that one of the priorities of our presidency. I'm sure that will remain a priority for some time to come, but it should be, it could be a chance for the EU really to define itself better in the future.
Okay. Well, Your Excellency, thank you very much for speaking to me.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.